Hello everyone, welcome back to another Office 365 Support Corner webcast. Today we have as presenter Mihai Caltaru. As always, if you want to have the record of this webcast, please go to this website. They will be available when ready the record. And don't forget to assist next week's webcast that will be ADFS. Mihai, the stage is yours. Please.
Hi all, thanks Bruno, and thanks all for joining in. I was telling you that we will be covering right now two topics, anti-malware and anti-spoofing, and we will not do a deep dive on those topics. We will try to do, let's say, a best practice or the first approach when we have something like this. Of course, we can speak on each of these subjects for an entire day maybe, and we will still not cover up everything. But let's see what we can get. I have some slides prepared, but we will focus more on hands down and see what we can get out from that. If you have any questions at the end or even during the presentation, please feel free to ask me. Otherwise, you can also contact me from my blog, or you can go to the link that Bruno shared earlier to see the presentation there, and also you can follow up on these topics. So starting first, I will like to tell you that we are recording this session, and if I don't know, for any reason you don't want to be captured in the recording, please don't type in the link window, or you can also just see the recording afterwards. Starting with the presentation, I would like to start first with the architecture of the service, because we are talking about anti-malware and anti-spoofing, and when we are talking about this, we need to have an overview at least on what's happening behind the scenes. And in here, I will activate my laser pointer in here. You can see that for an inbound mail, for example, we have the first, let's say, line of attack for us, line of defense at least, it's the edge blocks that we are running in here. I can mention maybe, I don't know, reputation based on a reputation list based on IPs and domains even. We also have block lists that we own, and we also interrogate external block lists like Spam House, for example. And if something comes up in there, you will get rejected by an edge block for sure. The next line of defense, and we will come up a little bit in detail on this later, is the virus scanning. And we have three antivirus engines. One of those is ours. And if any of them detects anything, the message will by default get deleted. You also have some options in the policy, and we will go through those later. After that, of course, we will go through the exchange setup, and we have the resolver in here. We also have some transport rules. This is the transport part, and we will see how we can play with those to have the best approach to anti-malware and anti-spoofing at least. And the last layer of defense is the spam protection. Both of these have the possibility to deliver the messages to the quarantine, also to just reject the message if you, I don't know, for any reason you do feel so. Okay, so going further, you can also submit those messages from the spam protection, and even from the quarantine itself. You can submit them to the spam analyst. We will cover this later as well on how to do this. And after that, when we are talking about outbound messages from Office 365, in here you have the delivery to an Office 365 message mailbox, but you also have for example, Mailbox is in on-prem if you have, for example, a hybrid environment, and you will use some connectors, on-premise type connectors, to deliver those messages to your on-prem environment. You also have the normal score messages, which are the SCL ones, so those are not considered spam messages, and those are routed through the outbound pool. The outbound pool, when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about the IP pools that we are advertising for Office 365. And this is the normal pool. We also have a high-risk delivery pool. This is called high-risk delivery pool because we are trying even to deliver the messages that we mark them as spam. So when doing this, it's considered the best effort from our part, at least, because those high-risk delivery pools, full IPs, will be listed on a lot of block lists on the internet, and we are not pursuing any delisting from those, because that's basically our way to protect our normal outbound pool for not getting listed in the internet. So for the first messages that you are sending from a tenant, for example, and are marked as spam, those messages will go through this high-risk delivery pool. At some point, the user will be blocked by sending any messages outside. Right now, there is a self-service that any admin can do from their tenant in the administration console. You can see what are the users that are listed currently, and you can also delete them. So this is just an overview of the entire process. Of course, we can split them up and dissect them a lot, and there are a lot of details in here to be discussed on each of those topics. For today, we chose to speak about anti-malware, and this will be the first, let's say, part of this webcast. And when we are talking about anti-malware today, we will try to cover these issues from two perspectives. The first one will be from a reactive point of view, and the second one will be from a proactive point of view. So what is a malware? Usually, a malware is considered a software that does something malicious on our computer, or even it getting sensitive information is considered as well malicious. This is often distributed to email, and we are talking about attachments that are delivered through email in here when talking from the Office 365 point of view. And it can be delivered via an attachment or an URL. We do have some features as well that cover this URL part, and we will talk about those as well later. We had a couple of months ago, I think, it was a fax malware campaign, and I believe most of you could have heard about it. The messages appear to be coming from an online fax delivery service, and those messages didn't actually contain any attachments. And I was telling you about URLs earlier. They were containing links to any domains that weren't protected enough, so hijacked domains. So we had, usually it's, as I'm saying in here, it's unpatched web servers. And I'm having a couple of examples in here. This is a personal blog, which is actually a Romanian one, which was not actually quite patched. What the attacker did, it's just sent a link in that email to this personal blog, and they can do it even before or even after they send the email campaign. They are trying to inject something in that blog so that when you are accessing this website, you will get malware codes on your computer. It's not only on a blog. We did see it on wedding sites as well, and on a consulting company, a small business. So it's all over the place. It can range up to from small companies, from personal blogs to big companies. If the attacker finds an unpatched web server, they can use this against you. So in this particular scenario, the payload was a Trojan that was intercepting. It's basically a keylogger that it is intercepting keystrokes and was stealing credentials and I don't know any credentials that you are using against a web a banking website and so on. We were detecting this after a couple of, I think, in a day from the start of the campaign. But this is just an example and an overview on how you are seeing from our point of view. From now, I would like to go to the website and explain a little bit how this works. So when talking about the website, I'm talking about Office 365. So this is the tenant in Office 365. Everyone should have something like this. And I'm already logged in Exchange Admin Center. From a malware perspective, you have a policy in here, which is the default policy. You can also create custom policies if you go in here and click new, and you can customize these policies based on the recipients. So you can scope them out on recipient groups, even domains. And you also can also use any exclusions from those scopings. But the most important fact is that you have a default policy that works, and if the scoping on the customized policies doesn't apply to that user, it will eventually fall back on the default one. You cannot disable the anti-malware protection. It's not designed, the service is not designed to do so. So you will always have this this enabled. And let's go through it a little bit to see what choices do you have in here. By default, you don't have these notifications enabled, but you can enable them. I wouldn't advise to notify external senders because I don't know, an attacker, for example, could send some messages to a lot of recipients. They will not pay attention to the list or to the NDRs if that address doesn't exist or not, but they will pay attention to any notification. So that could trigger them, I don't know, to use that email address on future campaigns. So this one, it's on your choosing, but I wouldn't advise enabling this. Notify internal senders. I would do this because you can have also something from inside the company that a computer, for example, gets infected, and you would like them to know as well. But you would like also to know it from an administrator point of view, and you can check this notify administrator and use your admin email address as well. This is as well from internal senders and from external senders the same thing. You can use each of them separate email address or the same one. You can also customize the notifications if you like to do something like this, and you can put whatever you want in these fields in here. The default action for the malware detection response is to delete the entire messages I've shown you in the architecture a little bit earlier, but you can also choose to delete, actually to replace the attachment. So the service will detect the attachment as being infected. It will actually remove the attachment, and it will replace it with a TXT file that would explain what happened, what actually happened there. Also, not very advisable. Why you would say? Because most of the malware campaigns also include maybe a possible link in the body of the message, and you wouldn't want to for that message to get delivered to the recipient. Of course, this doesn't mean that if you choose this delete all attachments, the message will get through the spam filter. It could be detected as a spam, and it will get it could get an SEL and marked as spam as well. So the main important thing is that for you to remember is that Exchange Online Protection scans all messages with three different malware engines. These engines are updated on an hourly basis, and one of these engines is Microsoft's own antivirus engine. We don't advertise the other two due to the fact that we maybe change them, and we don't want also to advertise third-party products as well. Even if you try to whitelist certain emails by using, let's say, a transport rule, or even if you will whitelist them, whitelist an IP from the connection filtering. If you have a partner that sends you emails regularly and you don't want them scanned, the messages will still be scanned by the anti-malware engines. They won't be scanned. For example, you can bypass the anti-spam, but you cannot bypass the anti-malware engines. So there is no way in which you can turn this off. Even for outbound messages as well. When talking about outbound messages, everything gets scanned. If it gets detected, it will delete the entire message as well. So this is the malware policies. Now, when a malware has passed the filters and you have received it in your mailbox, it might not be detected by the local antivirus. You can perform the following steps. The first and foremost step that you have to do is to submit the sample to Microsoft. This is the best practice, and I will also paste the link in here. And why? Just because that we can analyze the sample in this way. You will submit us the sample. We will see what's that about. You can also check them if you want on third-party sites. Like there are a lot of public sites that scan those attachments if you do want them to, and see how many engines all over the world are scanning. But and are detecting this, but the main thing is that neither of the three antivirus engines that I was telling you about did detect this. So we have to submit it to us to actually get this sample analyzed and get you a feedback on it. To get your feedback on it, you will always have to sign in with your live account on this Malware Protection Center. In this way, you'll receive an email with the confirmation when you have submitted the file. And after that, you'll receive a confirmation when the file is being covered by our definitions, antivirus definitions, and also with a link that points you to the malware encyclopedia in here that actually shows you more details about that that malicious payload. The steps in here are pretty straightforward. I will go through them in a quick. You have to choose an enterprise user in here because you are a customer in Office 365. You have to put the company in here, the support number. You should have a case open with us. The product should be Office 365 and Exchange Online Protection. Priority, it depends on the priority that you do have, but I should choose, I would choose medium impact. Just a small addition or note in here, if you do have also files that are detected as a false positive. So maybe you have a Word file, for example, that got detected by EOP as a malicious, as a malware. You will also have to do the same thing as in here. So you have to browse the file in here, and just very important thing, it will get rejected if it's not in a zip or a RAR archive with the password infected. So you'll have to archive the file, password protect it with the infected password, and after that, browse it, upload it. If you have any additional information, it's put in here. If it's a false positive, I believe that this file should not be detected as malware. If it's a virus, leave it as it is. After submission, it usually takes, depending on the payload, it usually takes 1 hour or maybe up to 2 hours to get a response and get this blocked in Office 365. It depends from case to case. This is not to be taken as a, I don't know, a fixed deadline. What else you can do after this submission? When you have the, you will receive an MMPC code, it's called. You have to, you can provide this to the support engineer that you have the support case opened with. And we can also check them and follow up on the submission that you have been taken earlier. But what to do next if, for any instance, okay, you have uploaded this, but you'll basically need more information on what happened on your company. How many users did receive that malware? And you can do a message trace on it. I would advise you to run an extended message trace actually, because these traces get a lot of more details on it, but you can also run a normal message trace if you are in a hurry to just see what actually happened in there. For a normal message trace, you just follow these steps in here, but for an extended one, which will typically take at least an hour to complete, and you will have a CSV file to download, you'll have to set up some things. So let's say, for example, that you've received this message today or yesterday, for example. In order to run it from the portal, if you don't have the PowerShell to run it from the PowerShell with the PowerShell commands, you have to put a custom date range in here. And the main thing is that you will have to put the starting date that, to be older than a week in the past. This is mandatory for extended message traces. So it should be earlier than 10th of March. So we should choose 9. When you're choosing 9, you will see in here, because if you are choosing, I don't know, a different option in here, you'll not have some options that you will see that we require. You can add a sender if you have something or a recipient if you want to. But the main thing that, let's say I would advise if you have something like this is to use a message ID. Why? Because that message could be delivered, to multiple recipients. And why not senders? Because it could be that the senders are different, but the message IDs are the same. Why is that? Because usually when the attackers use this kind of attacks, usually they are using the same message ID. They don't care about that. They care about a from address to get and the recipients and so on. So use the message ID. Check this box in here. Include the message events in routing details switch report. You can put a title for this if you don't want a default one. And another option will be to complete this field in here with the notification email address. You can put your administrator email address in here, which will actually allow you to receive an email when the extended message trace is actually finished. When it's finished, you'll receive a link. So go to that link. You'll have to download it by yourself. Only the global administrator is allowed to do this. It will point you to this one, to view pending or completed traces, which looks something like this. It should look complete. I have also one in progress, but it should look complete, and you have a link in here to download this report. I have already downloaded this report earlier for the not to have any surprises, and let's open it. Let's just see what we can actually find in it. This is actually a message that doesn't have anything to do with malware, of course. It was a reply from an encrypted message through Office Message Encryption sent from the portal of 365 back to a mailbox in Office 365. What I'm usually doing when opening a message trace like this is try to clean it up a little bit. So I'm selecting the first row, filter it, maybe format it with the column width, and also put it in a chronological order from date to time. In this case, we only have one message ID, so this is simple, but you can get a very large extended message trace in here. And you'll have to do something like just choose one message ID in here because we want to focus on one of them. So this is important just to have a much more, let's say, cleaned up view of the entire message trace. You can go afterwards to the, let's say, main concern that you have. So regarding the anti-malware, all the information that you need is in the last column, which is called custom data. And you'll have to find something that starts with S column AMA. Usually not looking in here or if I want to do something much more cleaner, I'm opening an editor, in this case Notepad++, pasting this in here, and you can use this trick to replace any semicolon with a new row, and it will look something like this. It's much better right now. So when we have this, this entire cell, because I've copied the cell with the S column AMA from custom data, we have the following. We have the S column AMA, which is basically the first four lines. These are for the engines that we use in the service, and this one will be the details of the file. In this case, we didn't have any attachments, so V equals zero. If any attachment would be detected in this message trace, it will be V equals one or two or whatever. If it's actually an action that is being taken on it. In here, you'll have the name of the malicious, the malware that you have, and also the name of the file, because you could have a lot of files and with different infections in here. What else you can look in here? You can see that we have STRA equals ETR, which comes from Exchange Transport Rules, and you have the rule ID in here, which you can get from the Get Transport Rules from your PowerShell command. And it's actually saying, telling us that an action was applied on that message to remove OME. I was telling you earlier that this message was actually a decrypted message from the portal. So I have a transport rule that I can also show you that decrypts message that decrypts the messages in case I want to. So it's this one, OME inbound. So it's the action is to remove the message encryption for the message. Okay. And the most interesting one, let's say, would be this one, which actually it's the export front anti-spam report from the header of the message. Is the actual value in that header in there. And from here, you can also see that the message was not considered as a spam. It has an SCL of one, and it's in here. And it also has, let's say, the direction is inbound. As I was telling you, this was an inbound message coming in. So from the getting back to the malware, from the malware perspective, you have these four lines in here. You can see that if any of the engines detected this, and if it did, with what definition, and which file or from the attachment. You can also match this with the response that you get from the Malware Protection Center after you upload and submit the file in there. This basically gets you much more information on this, but it will take for about an hour to run this. So depending on the messages that you find in there. So the best approach would be to first upload the file to the Malware Protection Center, and then go through this one. You can also do something like let's say a reactive measure to search and delete those messages that have been delivered in the entire organization. You have the search-mailbox commandlet, and you can use that to actually search on let's say some mailboxes or on the entire list of the mailboxes that you have in there. You can use a search query based on the subject of the message. You can also use, for example, a log version of it, in which you can get the answers and first see what are the results, and after that get back to the deletion of the messages as well. This is like, let's say, a reactive measure that will help you for your users not to get infected, or at least maybe they didn't open those attachments as well, and maybe you have a very large company, and you can manipulate with that commandlet to play with it and see what was the rate of infections on your computers or your users as well, and so on. Okay, getting back to proactive measures. Further on, and I will show you some other transport routes in here. So going back to it, and I'm underlying this as much as I can, EOP doesn't block any executable files. This was this is a custom thing that you have to do, and everybody has to do this if they want to do this. And we are getting a lot of questions of why we are not doing this. Is that just because that we have a lot of customers that actually do need those, and we cannot block them by default, or don't at least don't leave them the opportunity to check this. If I'm making a small note in here, we are changing a little bit the service, and in a couple of months you will see something, a new feature that it's called common attachment blocking, and this will by default block some of the common attachments, including executable contents, some of them, but you can uncheck them if you do actually want to receive those messages on your tenant. And we have customers that work with drivers, or they have projects that actually do need this kind of blocking from our point of view. So the same behavior was also on Exchange on-prem. You do have to create a custom transport rule to do this. How this transport rule works, I will show you in a minute, but basically it will detect any executable content, even if the file extension has been changed to something that's like .txt. So I'm having a virus that I want to send, and I'm thinking I can fool the system if I will change the extension of the file to a .txt from a VBS or a .exe. The system will not allow this because the service actually looks in the header of the message, and it will see that the message is actually an executable content or executable file, for example. And it will detect that message even if it's in a zip file, or even if it's in a multiple layer zip file. So it's in a zip, in a zip, in a zip, and so on. So we are detecting this from this point of view, and also from the file itself as well. How this transport rule looks like is something like this. You can name it block executable content or whatever your needs are. And you have a condition in here which, that is predetermined, and it's under any attachment has executable content. Be very careful not to confuse this with any attachment has an extension that matches this. And you have in here the extension, and I'll go back to it because I do have a transport rule that also covers these ones as well. So has executable content, it's different from the file extension includes these words. Even if you put in the file extension includes these words a .exe, it will block .exe files, but it will not block the .txt file that I was telling you about earlier, that the attacker renamed it from an executable file. So be careful with that. Also, always put has executable content as a condition in here. If you do need other conditions, or for example, add an exception because you do want to receive some messages from a partner that's sending you this, you can use the exception list. I'm also adding in here to notify the recipient with a message. This is a custom thing that you want to do. You can put in here whatever you'd like. In this case, and I will show you how a notification like this looks like, I'm putting some of the details of that message in the notification message so that the recipient knows what message was blocked and from who and so on. The main action should be probably to redirect this message to the hosted quarantine. Why? Because you do have access to it, at least for 7 days for quarantine messages, based on the transport rules. But if you would choose maybe something like block the message and delete it, that message will not be recoverable. So if you do think that there are some messages that you actually want us to get, you can recover them from the quarantine. The notification will be sent to the recipient, and they will be able to tell you as an admin. So as a notification email, I have some things that I've sent in here. You can test with the ACAR test file. It's a well-known all over the world. It's being used for anti-malware. And if you attach that to a file, it's actually a text string. I'm sending it to an Office 365 mailbox. Basically, I'm getting this notification. This is actually from the anti-malware policy that I was showing you earlier. Notify internal in here. Executable content, this is the notification that I was showing you in the transport rule. And these are all the information that could possibly help a recipient to determine if this message was legitimate or not. This message was actually sent from a live account. You can send a password protected file because those will not be scanned. So I have an executable content with a password protected within a password protected zip. This is a workaround for you to get that actual message. So if it's password protected, the service cannot scan within the archive itself, and it will basically deliver the message from there on. As I was telling you, the executable content files are in this TechNet article, which you can use. I will paste it as well in the link in here. These are all the executable content files that we actually block them today through this ETR, for example, and we consider executable content. In the future, we will have something like the common attachment blocking that will, by default, will block some of the files, file types that are considered malicious by us. So we have analyzed them, and throughout the year, we've seen that a lot of these files are actually sent with malware. Right now, you can also create this custom transport rule that basically blocks some of the attachments if the file extension matches and you have a lot of names in here. Those will be included also in the common attachment blocking that I was telling you about. The same thing applies in here. Notify the recipient with a message. It's a different transport. I can write whatever I want in here. And also to deliver the message to the hosted quarantine as well. Okay, you can also get a lot of details on this on my blog in here. It's EOP Insights, and this comment attachment blocking I was covering up in here for quite some time. We are working on it, and when this will be finished, we will you will see it in under the anti-malware policies in protection in here. So you'll be able to uncheck some of the files and so on. One of the most important, let's say, things that we've seen, and I will come back just a little bit to the slides, is the advanced threat protection that we've implemented last year. It has three main stages that we do cover. It's protection against unknown malware, which is basically a zero-day malware. Time of click protection, which is the time, real-time protection against malicious URLs I was telling you about earlier, and the rich reporting and tracing that helps you identify the I don't know, extension of the attack on your organization. From an administrative or an architecture point of view, the message gets in Office 365. It then gets through the all the, these antivirus engines that I was telling you about. Only if those detect it as clean, and the anti-spam as well doesn't say anything about the message as well. Those attachments, and we have some supported file types that are actually in the TechNet article that I pasted you earlier with executable content, will be sent to a detonation chamber or a sandbox. And if they do something like, if that file is an executable and does something malicious to the to that environment, or if it calls for a registry key, or if it asks for an elevation, that can be considered as unsafe, and that message will be, that attachment actually will be rejected. We will also have something that, because all this detonation chamber requires some time, you do have some delays in which the emails will be delivered. So to cover those delays, we will implement something like dynamic delivery, and you will receive the message with the body and some and everything in real time, but the attachment will be replaced with a placeholder with a TXT file that it will explain you that that file is under scanning for the moment. And when the scanning will be finished, you will find it in here if everything checks out fine. After all the attachment detonation chamber is being done, if you have something in the body of the message that has an URL or anything in there that points to a website or URL in general, those will be rewritten, and I will show you how. If you hover your mouse over it, it will basically redirect you through the EOP web servers, which will ask in real time some of the lists that we are using for this reputation of URLs. And if something is strange with that, you'll get a pop-up. If not, you'll not see anything, and you will go to directly to that website that you actually needed. And let me show you how it looks like from an admin perspective. So safe attachments and safe links, as I was telling you about. We also have a policy, as in the malware protection in here. But in this case, you don't have a default one. You'll have to create one for your users, or for a user, whatever you want to do. This is applied to only one mailbox, for example, but you can apply it to a recipient domain or a group and so on. And you can also add exceptions if you have a group or a domain, of course. In here, you can put a description. You can give it a name that is specific to this policy. But the main thing is in here on settings. I was telling you about earlier about dynamic delivery. It will be added in here under replace. And it will, instead of blocking the email or just replacing the attachment, it will deliver the email and it will replace the attachment with the placeholder. But as opposed to this, in here, the message will get delivered in real time and you will not see any delays. The delays are not larger than 7 or 10 minutes, but in some cases, those delays are important. So that's why we came up with this new feature. So you have the replace option, which will be not advisable. It depends from company to company on what do you want to do. You have also an enable redirect feature in here, which will actually send the blocked attachment to an email address. If you want to analyze it yourself as well, you also have this option in here. And if the scanning for any attachment due to, I don't know, the file being corrupted or something like this times out, you will apply the default, the action that you've chosen in here. The SLA for the scanning of an attachment is currently 30 minutes for within safe attachments. And when it reaches this this timeline, it actually applies the action that you've chosen in here. Okay, so this is about the safe attachments and the safe links, which has the same logic as the safe attachment policies, have a policy that you have to create. It's not a default one. You'll have to apply it as well on a user, recipient domain, or a group. You also have in here an on or off switch for this safe link policy. For example, in some countries, due to compliance reasons, you're not allowed to track user clicks because you will be able to track if the user actually accessed that URL or not. And you also have the option for some of your users. For example, you can create a policy for the IT guys to be able to click through the original URL, even if we place a warning on it, and I will show you how that warning looks like. Maybe some of the users are knowledgeable and they will know what to do or further on not to get infected. I also have the option to bypass the rewriting for some URLs. In my case in here, I've put bing.com just for an example in here. One of the test links that you can use is this one, is spamlink.contoso.com. This URL will be blocked by safe links, and you can test it out to see that the actual policy works and everything is fine from your end. And if you click on it, you'll be redirected to this one. The redirection means that if you hover the mouse over it, you'll see in the bottom of the screen that we are redirecting through a web server of ours. Some of the users, if they are more knowledgeable, will know about this and will ask you, but we did actually get some results from some tests that we did that it's actually better to do it like this because there are a lot of users that don't actually look on the hover of the redirection of the URL. And you can see in here that it tells you that this website has been classified as malicious. You can close this page, but I have also the option to continue to this page if I do want to. If I don't check that box, this message will not appear in here. And some of the links in here, if you see the bing.com is not being redirected, if you look on the bottom of the page, but the other ones are redirected through our web servers. And the message trace report that I was telling you about, notification looks something like this. It was just received. An ATP blocked URL is this one, but an ATP blocked message, and I'm trying to find it, is this one. This is a notification that you will receive as an admin that the message was actually containing a malware that is being blocked by ATP. So this is how it looks like from this perspective. Okay, and going forward with the second let's say, topic. It will not be that long, but we have a lot of, we are seeing a lot of cases with anti-spoofing. What this means is that when somebody is trying to impersonate a trusted source, even internal or external from PayPal, like this in this example in here, but you can also get some internal spoofing, so your own domain gets spoofed. They are trying to send you an email, and they are trying to trick you to get some information out from you and so on. Just remember that the 5322 is the address that it will show up in the email client. And I'll show why I'm telling you this a little bit later. You have some features that you can use to protect yourself of this, or to protect your domain at least, because you have the SPF and you have the DMARC. What SPF does is that the 5321 or the mail from address header, or whatever you want to call it, is the email address that is used to do SPF checks. Of course, if the email cannot be delivered, the path this is the path where the bounced message is delivered to. In the header, you will find it as a return path in the message headers. Okay, the one that you do see it in Outlook is the 5322 from, and this is the from address in the message headers. How does SPF works? You publish the IPs in your public DNS. For example, if you are only sending from Office 365, you have protection.outlook.com in your SPF record. You are sending an email to tony.net, for example. This actual server checks your DNS record if the IP that is connecting to their server is actually listed in the SPF record. And if it does, it allows the message further on, or it does any action that the recipient chosen to do in this case. Forwarding email, it will break SPF check, because if you are sending from contoso.com, this is the connecting IP will be IP1. It will go to outlook.com, which is forwarding the email, and it will use a different IP, which is IP2 to Gmail. And Gmail will forward again to an Office 365 address. And this is a different IP, it's Gmail's IP. And when Office 365 will check the SPF record for contoso.com, it will see that the Gmail IP is actually not listed in the DNS in there. A second, let's say, issue would be that if you are using IP shared IPs, sorry, for your organization with I don't know, let's say from your provider, it gives you an IP that it's also covering a lot of other customers. And when you are using this IP and you are publishing this in the SPF, different customer or an attacker, for example, that is using the same shared space as you, can send malicious email in your name, and those will be authenticated because they will appear to be coming from the shared IP that you are also using legitimately. So you can also be aware of this as well. You have to have in your SPF records unique IPs that only belong to you, so that you don't have any issues regarding this. When talking about DMARC, we can talk 2 days on this topic, but it's basically an anti-spoofing and anti-phishing technology. It's used by large organizations currently because these large organizations need this. We, as a Microsoft, are also doing this. The main thing that this comes up with, and I'm seeing that as a real advantage, is that the feedback loop that you get. Because if you do have a message that does not pass DKIM or SPF, it fails DMARC, any recipient that is checking for any DMARC in here will send you a notification back to an email address that you publish in your DNS record. So if you do have something like this, it's very useful because you will get reports on these messages, and you can see, oops, maybe I forgot to add this IP in my SPF record, or I maybe forgot to enable DKIM on these servers. And you can play with the legitimate emails, but you can also see the spammers that are using your domain to send email to spoof it to certain recipients. It doesn't have to be yours as well. When talking about this this issue, we have from the active part, the first step that everyone should perform is to submit that message to the anti-spam team, as I've shown you in the anti-malware. Let me show you how it looks like, because we have a page that tells you how to do this. So you have to create a new blank email. It doesn't have to do to have any signature disclaimer on it and so on. Address the email to the Microsoft team that reviews the messages. For junk messages, you have the junk at office365.microsoft.com. For phishing or scam messages, fish at office365.microsoft.com. You'll have to put the junk or phishing message, scam message into that mail as an attachment. You can attach multiple messages if you have multiple messages to it, but it's really important to submit them. Why? You will not receive a notification like in the malware submissions, but it's an automated process that works in the background. And as much submissions that we get, they do get a result out of it. Usually it takes, let's say, more than 24 hours to see those. So if you are seeing something that it's on a larger scale and it's affecting your organization with a big impact, you can open an SR with us and we can work with it. We can see what are those messages and what we can do from this point of view. But the first thing that you will have to do is I would submit them in here. You also have an add-in in Outlook that you can use. For this, this will be much more easier to submit, not to create a blank email. You just have to press a button in there. And it's also available for Outlook 2016 for about 1 month ago. And there's also another option that you can use. You can use a transport rule that you can create to block the spam reporting messages sent to Microsoft by your users. If you don't want them to submit those messages, even if, as false positives or false negatives, you can apply the rule and you can use those email addresses. If the recipient is one of these messages, you can block the messages and get a notification to them. Maybe they shouldn't do this. From a proactive measure, I would do the following things. I have an article open written on this one on my blog, which was getting quite some visibility. But you can do something like we have two transport rules. You can read the entire article; it's good reading, I think. But the main thing is that you would have to focus on one of these two transport rules. The first one is based on the DMARC. If you are publishing if you want to publish a DMARC record for your domain. But the simple one, with which I'm always recommending as a first thing to be done for the all the customers, is to create a rule based on the SPF. So, for example, if a message header includes an authentication result with SPF fail, In this case, I've prepended the message or the subject with SPF ETR because I'm testing this, but you can deliver it to the quarantine. You can add the different conditions that, for example, the sender is inside the organization or outside the organization, for example, and the domain is yours, and so on. The sender, you can add the condition, for example, if the sender address includes one of these words, and you can put contoso.com, and it will actually help you filter out any internal spoofing that you might get from an external source. Because if you don't have any marketing companies that are sending emails in your name to your users as well, you shouldn't get any false positives. But if you do have some partners that are sending emails to you in your name with contoso.com, that the messages are coming from outside the organization, those messages will have to be treated as an exception in here, and you can add an exception and actually add the maybe the connecting IP or something else that resides in the headers of these messages in here. If you are going to look over this this transport rule, as I was telling you, the most simple way is to, if the message header includes a from address at contoso.com and the sender is located outside the organization, do the following: set the spam confidence level to 9. Now, depending on the spam filtering policy that you have in there, the SCL 9 is considered a high confidence spam, and you have two options in your default policies and even if in your custom policies. For a high confidence spam, the action taken for high confidence spam and for spam, and you can find them in here. So this is spam. And the high confidence spam that I was telling you about with SCL9 would be, the action would be to quarantine the message. You can also choose a different way in here approached, and the action should be to deliver it to the quarantine, but it depends from company to company. You can also use this commandlet to actually see how many messages were hitting this actual transport rule or whatever transport rule you want to check. And we are talking about executable content and so on, block common attachments and all the transport rules that I've created earlier in there. So you can use this one to actually see what was the impact of that transport rule on your mail flow, for example, in your organization. I think I was got over the time, so sorry about this. But yeah, if any questions or anybody has anything.
Thank you, Mihai. In the meantime, if you don't mind, I will present the feedback form.
Yeah. Even so, it's, and I will paste also this one. You can follow up on this one or any other topic that you might have related to EOP on my blog as well, and I will paste because I've talked about it for quite some time. So we have a question. What should we do when a safe email is being delivered from a high-risk delivery pool and marked as spam? So just reported as a false positive. It depends, Anna. We are talking in here about outbound spam. And when we are talking about outbound spam, it's a, let's say, a quite slightly different approach. We have some options for outbound spam that you want to have them checked every time, each time, in which you need to, as an administrator, you need to get any copies of the messages that were sent as spam and marked as spam, so that you can get proactive as quickly as possible. Because as in with malware, a computer can get infected and can send a lot of spam. And after some time, that user will not be able to send any emails from their account. And you as an admin have this option to get those copies in your mailbox. So the first thing is to actually look in the header or in the message trace what actually determines that message to get I don't know, marked as spam. And we have, for example, and I will try to look for the article in the meantime, we have some third-party block lists that we are checking even for outbound spam. And from time to time, we are seeing a lot of disclaimers that contain links to third-party sites and so on, which are considered malicious. And when this gets detected in your body, in the body of the message, it might get, you might get an SCL, a high SCL on it. So that's easy to detect if you just look for the body in the within a body of the message and see what was the if they have any URLs that are being listed and so on from our point of view. But getting back to your question, yeah, you can also report it as a false positive if you don't have anything. I don't know. Malicious or suspicious in the body of the message, because it could be that it's something very obvious from your point.
Any other question? Okay. I think there are no other questions. So thank you everyone for attending also this webcast with us. As Bruno said in the beginning of the webcast, we have another one planned on the next week about the ADFS and single sign-on. Thank you, Mihai. Thank you, Bruno. And thank you, Razvan, for this nice presentation. See you next time. Ciao.
Thank you, Aldo. Bye-bye.